Howdy do, buckaroos. This is the Mac Observer Daily Observations podcast for Monday, November 5th, 2018. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, how's it going?
Not too bad, Andrew. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Excellent. And with me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
I am good, too. Hi, good morning.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear everybody's good on a Monday. We have a couple things to talk about, and I have a couple of sponsors to tell you about, but we'll get to that shortly. First, John, I want to start with you because I think this is an interesting idea, something that you posted last week about how the MacBook, well, according to you, the MacBook is dead. What do you mean by that?
And Dan Morin at Macworld. Yeah, we have a like mind on this. We didn't talk about it, I don't know whether we each read each other's articles, but I started off with an article last week about the new MacBook Air. Apple competes with itself. And, you know, the new MacBook Air has a slightly larger display. It has a little more room for a heftier Amber Lake CPU. It has the T2 security chip. And it's just so much head and shoulders above the MacBook that was launched in 2015 that I'm beginning to feel like it would be not very sensible for Apple to try to update the MacBook. It's just been overcome by events. You know, when the MacBook first came out, it was pretty cool. It looked like it was the next MacBook Air in 2015. It had the Retina display. The MacBook Air did not. It had the USB-C port. It had the newer keyboard, and it looked like, wow, the MacBook Air without a Retina display is dying. The MacBook is the future. But and I bought one.
Well, you thought it was cool enough to buy one, right? That's
and
yeah.
I love it. I love the keyboard. I have found the 12-inch screen is a bit too cramped. I used to have a 2011 MacBook Air, and I like the 13-inch screen better and the slightly larger physical presentation of the computer, even though you know they're both pretty small and light. And so when the MacBook Air came out, I kind of got the feeling that there's teams leapfrogging each other, or maybe Apple has just decided that the MacBook Air was a failed experiment and it would be needless expense to try to resurrect it with a T2 security chip. And it always had running around a gigahertz, and it was fine for browsing and email, but it really wasn't the kind of workhorse machine that a creative technical professional would want to use. So it was really kind of a lightweight travel machine. And I don't know what the sales numbers were, but the fact that Apple updated the MacBook Air seriously and made it a really great machine, put two USB-C ports on it, kind of makes me think that the original MacBook is kind of dying. And then on Friday, Dan Morin said at Macworld, the last poor MacBook, you never quite found your niche. Many Apple watchers, yours truly included, thought the MacBook was the second coming of the MacBook Air. Where does that leave the MacBook? Either it's in need of a substantial refresh and reframing its place in the lineup, or bid it a tearful adieu. My money is on the latter. And that's Dan's comment, and I agree with it. So I don't see any marketing or technical sense to try to update the MacBook Air. It's always pretty been kind of small because it's a 12-inch display. There's not a lot of room in there for a hefty fan or a power-hungry CPU. So, and the 12-inch screen has proven to be kind of small for a lot of people. It's always been a little cramped for me.
Well, it's an odd size as well, because it's not quite, I know how this sounds, but it's not quite as rectangular as what the 13-inch screen is.
I think the 16:10, but it's an odd resolution. It's like 2304 by 1440 or something. So it's kind of a strange resolution, but
yeah, well, it doesn't seem as rectangular. It seems a little square, a little more square, kind of like the old 12-inch PowerBook was when that had its brief life. It was a little bit more square and a little less rectangular. So when I looked at it, I sort of looked at the 12-inch MacBook as the replacement for the 11-inch Air. when it was first released in 2015.
Yeah.
In that it's either your satellite machine, the one that you take with you when you go places, you know, short term, or it's perhaps a daily driver for somebody that doesn't have, that isn't constantly rendering video or, you know, constantly doing audio work. So when I looked at it, like, I thought it was a nifty little machine, but I didn't feel like it really had a place because at that point they were still selling an 11-inch Air. Andrew, how about you?
That was my thought as well, that when this new MacBook Air came out, my first thought was also that, well, there goes the MacBook. And, you know, like you guys were saying, when the MacBook first came out, John wrote about this before, but there was this thought that the MacBook Air would maybe become cheaper and it would maybe serve as a sort of education model of the MacBook to make it more, a little bit more accessible at the lower end.
Yeah.
But this new model, I think it starts at $1,200, which I'm pretty sure is the same as the MacBook.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
I think the MacBook is still $100 more expensive on the low end.
Oh. Okay. Well, that makes a bunch of sense.
Yeah, doesn't it? And I'm looking at the specs here, and it's 2304 by 1440, as I said, and 16 to 10 mm-hmm. screen ratio, the same as the MacBook Air. So,
now I know when we got a look at the new machines, I know that we talked about what's going to happen to the 12-inch MacBook, and I remember saying that we're not going to know for sure that somebody's just going to go look at the Apple Store page one day and it's going to just not be there. And maybe you will see it in the refurb section or something, and that's going to be it. And I still think that's what's going to happen. I'm glad to see that John and Dan agree with me on that.
I had one thought.
Yeah.
Just popped into my head. It could be a potential platform for the first A12 chip or A13 or A14. With two USB-C ports and an A13 chip in there, that'd be a powerful little computer.
It totally would.
But the question is it differentiated enough from the 2018 MacBook Air?
Exactly.
And with the difficulties in the instruction translation of an A12 chip to run your normal apps, be worth the hassle? So
right.
That's a question.
And, you know, you want to say, like, why would they keep selling this machine if this is what it is? But I also know that as of a week ago, you could go into an Apple Store and buy a 4-year-old Mac Mini like it was brand new. So,
yeah.
And today you can buy an iPad Mini if you so desire. They will totally sell you one. So, you know, there's that. So I think it's just going to disappear one day. I don't think they're going to update it.
I think the whole thing depends on the sales. If the MacBook Air takes off and the MacBook sales start to peter off, then yeah, I think just quietly kill it.
Andrew, what do you think?
So,
yeah, I agree. And I mean, now we have this situation now where, you know, like we said before, Apple is beefing up the iPad Pro, and maybe that could be your everyday computer instead of the MacBook.
Mm-hmm. I really think the new iPad Pro is taking over that satellite machine sort of position in the market, in Apple's lineup anyway.
Well, the blur factor here is that all of us writers realize the technical needs we have for a Macintosh to do the things we do in terms of writing and testing hardware and software and doing podcast production and all the things we do. But we have a skewed perspective for, as you said, for the vast majority of customers who aren't doing those very technical, erudite things. The iPad Pro can become, with a keyboard especially, can become their mainstream machine. Mm-hmm. So we have to keep that.
Yeah, I had a very mini rant when I was writing this morning because, you know, the embargo lifted. We have all these iPad Pro reviews out, and I was sitting in there reading them, and my eyes rolled so far back in my head because, like you said, John, they're all writing from their perspective of a, a techie reporter person, and all of the reviews had basically the same conclusion. It's never going to replace my computer. And
right.
I finally found a good review from iMore, Rene Ritchie. Mm-hmm. I think he writes more in the perspective of, you know, the everyday consumer.
Mm-hmm. He does. And
for the rest of us, I think it is a viable computer replacement.
I think this comes back to the thing that I talk about all the time, which is technological honesty. Like, if you sit down and you really think about it, could you get away with an iPad Pro? And for a lot of people, the answer is yes. It's just that for a lot of people, they've been conditioned for so long that you need the newest and the fastest and the biggest, you know, in whatever. But we're kind of at a point where, you know, if really all you're doing is you're going to read Facebook and you're going to play solitaire and you're going to check email and look at things on web pages, you're probably good with an iPad. You know, I know a number of people whose new computer is actually an iPad because it was just easier, you know, and it's something they already know because they had a phone. And so it was very easy to do all of the same stuff with a little bit more screen. And then, you know, you show them you can install Netflix on it and then everybody's happy. I think, excuse me, we are going to pause briefly. As I told you, we have a couple of sponsors this week. And the first one is Atlassian. Incidents are inevitable, and what it comes down to is how your company responds. So incidents, whatever they may be, require coordination between operations and software development teams, and they are the heroes that put out fires every single day. Getting those alerts immediately is critical when an incident occurs, and that's why there's OpsGenie by Atlassian. OpsGenie empowers dev and ops teams to plan for service disruptions and stay in control during incidents. This gives the teams the power to respond quickly and efficiently to unplanned issues, helps notify all the right people when something does in fact happen and takes into account things like a time zone or a holiday, and it allows for flexibility in how those alerts are deployed with integrations all over the place, like Amazon CloudWatch and New Relic and Jira and lots more. You can use this during an incident to look back on it afterwards. And when you do your postmortem, you can use that in order to make sure that whatever it was that went wrong that time doesn't necessarily happen again. But even if it does, you don't have to worry about it if you're using OpsGenie, because the second it happens, you're totally going to know. So if you visit OpsGenie.com, you can sign up to get a free company account with up to 5 team members. One more time, that's OpsGenie, G-E-N-I-E.com. And you will never miss a critical alert again. Our other sponsor today is Jamf Now. It is easy to keep track of your own Mac or iPad or iPhone, but what about other Apple devices? As your business grows, so does your digital inventory, and that makes it harder to manage all of that hardware. This is even more true if those employees are actually remote. Jamf Now makes it easy to set up, manage, and protect your Apple devices. You check in your digital inventory, distribute Wi-Fi and email settings, deploy apps, enforce passcodes. You can even lock or wipe a device as needed from wherever you are in relation to where that device is. Jamf Now helps you manage your devices so you can focus on your business instead. And no IT experience needed. I actually really enjoy Jamf Now. It's a really great way when you are family tech support to keep track of all of those devices. Did that person run the update? Have they done something that has caused their hardware to be in some weird state? It's okay. Log into Jamf Now, walk through the steps, and you're able to restore those settings again, or at least see a little bit more about what's going on with that particular device, rather than having to walk somebody through a bunch of about screens to get version numbers for things, or just be able to check in once in a while and make sure everybody's keeping up to date. So you can make those phone calls and say, like, you really need to hit update on that button, Mom. I know there's a little red one on your settings. Please go ahead and click on it. It's okay. TDO listeners can start securing their devices today by managing the first three for free. Adding more is just $2 a month per device. Create your free account today at jamf.com/TDO. That's JAMF.com/TDO. And the other thing, I want to thank both of our sponsors today. And the other thing I wanted to talk about was, Andrew, a piece that you wrote. And part of why I wanted to talk about it is because what you're talking about specifically is the do not track countermeasure, I guess, for lack of a better word, that's built mm-hmm. into Safari. And the reason I want to talk about it is because I think this didn't get a whole lot of attention at the time. I mean, there was a little wave of, ooh, this is going to be cool on Twitter. But I don't think there was a lot of follow-up after that with what this actually does and why it's good for people. So I'd like you to break that down for us, if you could.
Yeah, sure. So this actually first launched with iOS 12 mm-hmm. and macOS High Sierra. So Safari has this thing called Intelligent Tracking Prevention. And what it does is it can automatically block tracking. Like, it's not really an ad blocker per se. It just blocks all of the tracking scripts.
Okay. So when you hear about things like Facebook tracking you from site to site, or you go look up some sort of something, or you consider buying something and you do a little research, and then whether you buy it or not, all of a sudden ads for that start showing up down the side of Facebook. Is that the kind of thing we're talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And so with iOS 12 and Mojave, they updated this, we'll call it ITP for short.
Mm-hmm.
So with ITP 2, it blocks these social media like buttons and share buttons,
mm-hmm.
Especially the ones that Facebook has, because that's... the main reason how Facebook tracks you across the web is through these little buttons that contain special mm-hmm. tracking code. But they also introduced this a little bit more advanced feature. It's what it's called, this anti-fingerprinting technology. And so what fingerprinting is a website can figure out what browser you're using. They can figure out some details about your operating system, like what fonts you're using, what, you know, versions of everything that you're using.
Mm-hmm.
And so they combine all of this information into a data profile. So what ITP2 does is it gives websites basically a generic set of information. So okay. They'll know that you're running Safari and a Mac and mm-hmm. maybe one other thing, and that's it.
Okay. So that means that when you go to a website and when I go to a website, it's basically sending back the same information, regardless of whether it's you or me or John or anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And what I was, what I wrote about today is, you know, of course, advertisers don't like this.
I'm shocked, that this is their reaction.
Right.
So part of what makes this interesting to me is that Apple is sort of giving this for free. And also that it's a thing that started happening, you know, sort of slowly. And then, you know, more people added Facebook like buttons and different things. And, you know, this sort of happened quietly,
mm-hmm.
you know, over time. Not a lot of people knew about it, and you know, it was something a lot of advertisers knew about it, but not a lot of people knew about it. So I think part of what made it interesting to hear this discussed is part of what I've seen as a general wave of interesting stuff at Apple, where user security is just part of what they talk about now as a feature of whatever the new thing is that they're announcing.
Mm-hmm.
So we hear about, this is how much information we have about you, or this is how your information is kept safe, or this is how your information never makes it to us because we don't need it, or, you know, whatever it might be. And I think that's interesting. And I've tried to listen for that in other keynotes and other, you know, tech announcement sorts of things. And I'm not seeing it from other places the way I do from Apple. And
the other company that's notable for this is Microsoft. If there's one other company that was second place,
mm-hmm.
I would put Microsoft in second place in terms of promoting user security and privacy.
Yeah, I have seen more of it from them, but I don't see it as a matter of course the way that I do with Apple yet. And I'm hoping that changes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We're never going to see it at an Android event. I'm just going to go ahead and draw that line in the sand now. I'm pretty sure I can write that in pen.
Yeah.
So I think this is good, and part of why I like it is because I don't like having those things track me, and having this happen automatically is very nice, as opposed to what you used to have to do where you went into Safari preferences and checked the do not track and had to say, like, you know, don't keep these cookies and, you know, do these different things. Like, there were things that you could do, but you had to go and do them. And this is just sort of a gimme. So this is one of those things that comes from keeping your software up to date, because even if you're on High Sierra, you can run the version of Safari where you get this as part of the program. So,
yeah. So this isn't, as far as I know, I don't think this is limited to iOS 12 and Mojave. It's just a Safari update.
Mm-hmm. Which is good, but I think it only goes back one. I think, and I am certain if I'm wrong about this, I will get mail about it. So I will let you all know tomorrow if anybody writes in. But I think the lowest operating system you can run to get the version of Safari that contains this is 10.13, which is High Sierra. It comes with Mojave, but I don't think you can run it on Sierra. I think you have to have at least 10.13 in order to do this. But I think it's great. John, is this a technology that you're glad to have?
Oh, yeah. One of the things I'm wondering about as an aside is on that same page of privacy, at the bottom where it says allow sites to check if you have Apple Pay,
mm-hmm.
I have my doubts about that. I want to learn more about that, because I don't think I'm particularly excited about the idea of having a website double back on me and say, oh, this guy's got Apple Pay enabled, and then maybe do something. So I want to explore more on that and find out if that's a potential problem.
I look forward to reading your article once you determine that. Mm-hmm. Because that is an interesting thing to consider. I think part of why they do it is just whether or not they should pop up the Apple Pay button. I just wish everyone would pop it up, because if you do have it, it's super convenient. And if you don't have it, maybe this is a reason why you should set it up. So I don't know. I think that's going to go ahead and do it for us today. I'd like to thank both of you for being here. Andrew, thanks for coming by and talking about Safari with us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, as always.
Of course. And John, as always, thank you so much for being here with me today.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me, Kelly.
And I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. That's going to do it for Daily Observations, Monday, November 5th, 2018. I will talk to you tomorrow. And until then, be excellent to each other.